I'm far from the first to take up this theme, for Bill's love was warmly and continually reciprocated by the school. When in December of 1985, Bill Aycock retired, after 37 years of service, deans and former deans stepped forward without reserve to celebrate his remarkable qualities. Dean Ken Brown, Aycock wrote in the School of Law's review, had been the mainstay of the faculty almost from the day he joined it until the day he retired. To Dean Brown, Aycock had always been the ideal faculty member, superior in teaching, in scholarship, and in public service. Someone who consistently, as he wrote, supplied his colleagues and his dean with good and wise counsel and with good grace and humor. An earlier dean, Dixon Phillips, Jr., as you heard, initially Bill's law school classmate, later his faculty colleague, recall Bill not simply as the finest academic mind among the storied members of the class of 48. Instead, Dean Phillips wrote, his academic excellence as a student was probably not a fact worth writing about 40 years later, if that were all there was to it. The important thing, he wrote, is that his quickly established academic preeminence was matched by the affection that his personal qualities as quickly earned. Unassuming, unfailingly civil and sensitive, good-humored, ungrudgingly helpful, even tempered, he was, Dean Phillips wrote from the outset and by common consensus, our peerless leader. Even then you could also sense that whatever power might one day come his way, he was at odds with the old maxim, congenitally incorruptible. Dixon Phillips' predecessor, Dean Henry Brandes, praised Bill Aycock's character, integrity, hard work, common sense, uncommon intelligence, self-discipline, exacting standards for himself, devotion to the school and the university. Others will teach his courses, Dean Brandes wrote, and sit in his faculty seat, but in the sense of equivalency, he will not be replaced. And I wish I had time to lift up later beautiful tributes authored by Dean Judith Wegner and by Dean Designate Martin Brinkley, but I should turn to the impact on our staff and our students. In some ways, the deep, very personal affection the Carolina staff always felt for Professor Aycock is the surest mark of his greatness as a human being. For staff members have a way of finding out a lot about those they serve and what they found firsthand repeatedly over days and weeks and years of interaction is that this brilliant professor, this chancellor, was always interested, truly interested in them, in their lives, remembering their children, asking about their personal concerns, and always with humorous self-deprecation and modesty, generous with his time, a genuinely good man. And let me reflect on the student view, on why he had such an unparalleled impact as a teacher on three generations of students. First, the bare statistical evidence of that. Beginning in 1967, the School of Law first offered an annual teaching award, the Frederick B. McCall Award, bestowed by a vote of the graduating third-year class on their single most outstanding law professor. During the 19 years between 1967 and his retirement, Bill Aycock was the choice of five first-year classes, a singular honor. In a faculty so full of great and devoted teachers, no one in his era even came close. And I can reliably confirm that those rewards were not simply the passing whim of young thoughts. For I've since had the privilege of hearing hundreds of alumni, graduates from the 1950s and 60s and 70s and 80s, reflect back on their law school days in Chapel Hill and so quickly single out Bill Aycock as the greatest professor they ever had, and indeed the greatest influence on their subsequent professional lives. Why? Let me begin to try to answer. Bill possessed, first of all, the great teacher's love in conveying not his own views or personality, but the joy, the mystery of his subject. The law in all its grandeur and complexity. Like a great teacher of anatomy, he would show the classes not simply that the thigh bone was connected to the hip bone or the sternum and the biceps, the basic frame of the body, but to carry on the metaphor, he would show the miraculously complex interrelationship between bone and muscle, tissue and sinew, organ and cell. He brought the law to life in the classroom, conveying through his distinctive Eastern North Carolina accent, his slightly mischievous smiles, his lively, droll classroom examples, the sheer joy and excitement of discovery. He even made you believe, I was one of his students, that you might possibly continue on that journey yourself, that you might carry out personal explorations into the law's meaning and uses long after you were sent forth to practice on behalf of future clients. Dean Judith Wagner once tried to capture this quality of Bill's teaching by quoting an observation from William Butler Yeats. Education is not the filling of a pail, but the lighting of a fire. Bill Aycock lit fires all over the campus. This alone was a great gift, enough to merit 5 teaching awards, yet beyond that great gift, the capacity to convey excitement and gratification in finding and discovering and appropriating the law, Bill silently and simultaneously guided us through a more central course of study, an almost daily meditation on a theme that religious traditions and a Greek and Roman heritage have deemed of central importance, the nature of virtue and its values, some subjects that are somewhat out of fashion in many contemporary circles. It is here, I suggest, where Bill Aycock rose beyond even the finest technical teachers of the law. For through his own behavior, through the links he constantly made between the law as doctrine or rule and the law as aspiration or spirit, Bill Aycock taught generations of Carolina law students that their chosen discipline could be noble and fine, and that lawyers might use law to advance justice and goodness. As one of Bill Aycock's students from 40 years ago, I can attest, along with countless others before and after, that we didn't need any formal lectures on ethics or professionalism or the model rules. We listened to Bill Aycock's deep and abiding conversations, which showed his commitment to those ideals, and we sensed in that our own obligation to develop and live out just such a creed every day in our professional lives. Dean Phillips closed his 1986 tribute to Bill Aycock with what I might call a profession of faith. He writes about his own writing about Bill Aycock. I've deliberately emphasized the qualities that allow me to use the heavy words hero and noble freely, for I have no doubt that in the grand reckoning, Bill Aycock deserves that grand appraisal. None of us here has yet witnessed that grand reckoning day, though some have faith that it will come, and indeed may already have come, as Bill Aycock gave over his mortal frame last Saturday evening. But I join Dean Phillips, and possibly many of you in this sanctuary, in the conviction that insofar as it is given to humankind to judge one another, William Brantley Aycock will be found worthy, will be sanctified in any such reckoning. He was and always will be to our faculty, to our staff, to our students, to our alumni, and dare I say, to the university and the state he loved and served, the perfect exemplar of what we hold dearest what we value most, what we have most loved.